य गोपी जनवाला गिरिवर दारी जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवर दारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन जमुना थीरावनचारी जमुना थीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 64. This chapter is entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized. Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyas Charan Atma Vaishyair Videyatma Prasadam Adigichati Ragadvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyas Charan Atma Vaishyair Videyatma Prasadam adigachati Raga dvesha vimuktaistu Vishayan indriyas charan Atma vashair videyatma Prasadam adigachati Agadvesha vimuktaistu Vishayan indriyas charan Deyatma Prasadam adigachati Gayatri. Prasadam adhigacchati. Raga, attachment. Dvesha, and detachment. Vimuktai, by one who has become free from. Tu, but. Vishayan, sense objects. Indriyai, by the senses. Charan, acting upon. Atmavashyai, under one's control. Videya Atma, one who follows regulated freedom. Prasadam, the mercy of the Lord. Adigacchati, attains. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Purport. It is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process. But unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual plane, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. The Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachment and detachment. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. Therefore, to act or not to act is within his control because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. Om Agyanta Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Nadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. I beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada, Guru Parampara. May Shishi Radha Sham Sundar be pleased, the devotees coming together to hear Bhagavad Gita. And may all the devotees also be benefited by the transcendental sound and teachings of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna. So this is second chapter entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, text 64. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So by some inconceivable mercy, we're able to hear directly Krishna's own words that he spoke to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. It's been passed down from guru to disciple to guru to disciple. Nihitam guhayam. It's in the heart. The truth is in the heart of the pure devotees, and they've kept this message completely intact. Sometimes people doubt this. You know, do you know this telephone game that children sometimes play? You try to pass a message on. It starts off with some statement or some sentence, and one person passes to the next, and by the time you get to the end, it's a completely different statement. Telephone game. So we think of the parampara, guru, disciple. How can it still be exactly the same? How can the words be the same? How can the meanings be the same? If it's dependent on persons who are just passing it on, with time we see time can change things. Some philosophers, they talk about the impossibility of communication. You know, if you say something to somebody, then every word, they feel every word and understand every word in a different way. It's very difficult to communicate. If I tell someone, you know, I understand you're going through a lot of grief, I'm available for you. So when I say I'm available for you, by available, I may mean I'm there if you need me. But the person hearing that may think, oh, you're available, therefore you should come by often, you should call me often. The word available is taken differently. I understand you're going through grief. So I may think of grief in my own way. Oh, you're going through a hard time, but you know, it's probably not too difficult. But meanwhile, the person, the grief they're in, is they're devastated. And so we try to communicate, and we see that words, everyone's taking words differently. It's very difficult to communicate properly. So these teachings, we may think, then what? How is this reliable, that this is being passed down, and it's still completely perfect and intact? Because there's a difference between material sound and spiritual sound. Spiritual sound, Shabda Brahma, means spiritual sound. And if you understand what that actually means, it can't be misinterpreted. When the pure guru speaks the mantra into the disciple's ear and into their heart, along with giving some guidelines and some practice how to meditate on that mantra. So the mantra itself, because it's spiritual, it begins to have an effect. It goes through different stages. The first effect of hearing the mantra is that it clears away misconceptions. By itself, the sound itself, the spiritual sound, if you hear it, this is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that if you chant Hare Krishna, what's the first thing that happens? Cheto darpanam marjanam. The chitta, the consciousness, starts to get cleansed. That's the first effect of hearing spiritual sound. And then, while one continues hearing again and again, now they're beginning their practice, they have a relationship to the guru, And then the next stage, not only is it clearing away misconceptions, prakashanta. Prakashante means that it completely illuminates. Then the truth in the mantra becomes illuminated in your heart. You realize it. Prakashante means like a light, illumination takes place as the purification continues. And then you continue to hear that same mantra. And then what happens? Then you actually get direct experience of what is there in the mantra. This is amazing. This is very hard to understand, actually. The mantras of the Bhagavad Gita are like that also. So first, we're hearing this verse, right? It's describing stitta pragya, one who has pure consciousness. It's giving you a description of that, but actually, when we're fully purified and we hear this verse, it's not just a description of something. You experience that consciousness, stitta pragya, by hearing the verse, by the power of spiritual sound. So, therefore, when it's understood that this is how it's transmitted, not that I should try to interpret what it is or change it in any way, just continue hearing it, following the guidelines of the guru who's given it, and you go through these stages of clearing the mind from misconceptions, then illumination, and then darshan. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says real hearing, shravanam, means darshan. You actually experience what you're hearing. So when Prabhupada is singing Brahma Samhita, Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpa vriksha laksha liteshu surabhi abhipalayantam. This seems to be a description of the spiritual world. But when a pure devotee sings it, it's not a description about something. When they hear those words, they're there. They're experiencing the spiritual world. This is the power of spiritual sound. Material sound is just information that we're passing. And it, it may become corrupted. It may be not communicated properly. But imagine this. There's a sound that if you just give it time and through purification, when you hear the sound in the purified state, you experience the very thing. It's not, the Vedas are not about something. The mantras in the Vedas are actually that thing. Itself, the substance, the vastu. So Bhagavad Gita is like that. It's amazing. So when Arjuna finishes hearing Bhagavad Gita, what does he say? Nashto moha smriti labda. Now, from your words, Krishna, my illusion is completely gone. All my illusions are gone. All my doubts are gone. And now I remember, I've attained remembrance of the truth, that I'm your eternal servant, and I will serve you as you desire. Fighting in this battle. So now it's 2025. This is 5,000 years ago, a different place, a different time, different circumstances, different mentality of the people. But here we have the same sound vibration. And the same effect can come. The only obstacles are within our own consciousness. But the sound is perfect and transcendental. We have to give it time and we have to follow the process. And it will illuminate everything. So nothing has changed. It's just a question of seeing what are the inner obstacles to realizing this truth. That requires a very sincere person. People who are not devotees who argue about these different points and how do you know if it's true and how do you know with this, there's so many philosophies. They haven't understood Shabda Brahma. You have to actually get purified and give it time and have a relationship to a spiritual master and chant the mantra. And all through this, then eventually, if you really want to know if it's true, you have to show the sincerity to give it time and focus and energy, and then it will light up in your heart, and you'll have realization. Everything is theoretical until the moment it becomes a reality within your own consciousness. So people are arguing about the truth. It's all futile. Nobody has realization. It's just the reasoning mind, the logic, trying to figure things out. Well, this sounds good. That can be defeated by somebody else. But spiritual sound will give you the realization with purification. And this verse also is very nice because it describes the obstacles that are in the way. Many treasures are in this verse. The second chapter is called the contents of the Gita summarized. So it's like the seed for the whole Bhagavad Gita. And in this section, Krishna is speaking about stitta pragya, a person who has stitta means steady. Pragya can mean intelligence, purified intelligence, also consciousness. So the verse is really just giving us the image of one in pure consciousness. Many verses in the Gita, they keep just giving you the image of a perfect person. They don't tell you to actually practice doing what they do. You know, it's not like this verse is saying you should try to do what this person in pure consciousness does. It's giving you the vision of what it is so you can begin to orient yourself towards it. Because you can't just start applying it right now. We'll be doing it from material consciousness, trying to apply a perfect state, will be an imitation. It will just be imitation. But still, there's something we're guided to do and to practice. But really what happens is eventually this purified state of which we're getting an image, it begins to, again, through the process of bhakti and purification, it begins to become your consciousness. You know, like they used to have when there's something called celestial navigation. Explorers would go to different lands. And they didn't even have maps sometimes, but they would try to follow the stars. There's a star there. And they would be able to calculate and determine, are we on the right path in relationship to the stars that they saw in the sky? So the verses of the Gita are also like that. They're like these shining stars of the perfect state. And we have to orient ourselves towards it, not with imitating it, or we may even imitate it, but knowing that I can't produce it, but it's getting me closer. It's getting me closer. Unless some grace comes, I can't do this, I can't have this consciousness, which is free from all attachment and aversion. Some mercy, this verse points out the mercy of the Lord. Prasadam adigacchati, one will attain it. So many of you also here have had that image also of the pure devotee. You came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, right? So it's like an image of that perfect person. And now it's not just about, let me do everything Prabhupada does from my state. I also understanding this will take some time. There's a process. Let me follow the guidelines he's given. But he also wants, every pure devotee also wants that you also come to the same platform. So it's like this far-off star that's shining. And we pray and we long and we follow the guidance to attain also a similar state. This is why pure devotees, they have such power in this world. For those who are a little open, a little receptive, then it becomes the life example. This is the person I want to be like. So let's look closely at this verse. I don't know if it's possible to put it back on the screen for everyone to see, 264. But I want to follow it very closely because there are many jewels in this verse and taking it one word at a time. So first thing it says, rag dvesh. Rag and dvesh means attachment and aversion. You know, we feel ourselves very independent and free in this world. That I have, you know, I'm choosing my desires, I'm making decisions. I have certain inclinations. I'm choosing my faith. Will I have faith in this or will I have faith in that? So it feels like we're very free. But Krishna says, in the 17th chapter, these inclinations and even one's faith is not chosen by you. It's not chosen by you. He says, svabhavaja. It is born from your conditioned nature. I'm talking about faith that just is a product of the material mind and material thinking material reasoning. Oh, which religion will you believe in? I'm going to become a Buddhist. I'm going to become Christian. Some inclination is there. It may just be the modes of material nature because of what shaped me. I have a svabhava, I have a certain nature, and then I move in this direction because of it. So it feels like the person will never imagine that they haven't chosen it. But Bhagavad Gita is saying the different things you're attached to, the different things you're averse to, the different things you like. Think about it. Your tongue likes things. Your ear likes certain sounds, doesn't like other sounds. Your mind likes certain ideas, rejects other ideas. All of this feels like a free person making choices. But Bhagavad Gita is saying svabhavaja. It is born from your nature, your conditioned nature. You know, our freedom is like, you know, you're sitting on this, on the tip of an iceberg in the middle of an ocean, and you have an oar, and you're thinking, you're sitting on the tip, and you're thinking, I'm going to go this way with your oar, or now I'm going to go this way, the other direction. But underneath you, there's a giant mass of ice, and that's moving in a certain direction. The person is unaware. They're thinking, I'm free, I have my oar, look, I'm moving it to the left. And you can't make, in the middle of the ocean, you can't really feel which way you're going. Maybe you feel like you're going left. But underneath is a mass of ice. That's svabhava. Our conditioned nature is like that mass of samskars, unlimited samskars. They all come together and form a mass, and that determines what you're attached to, attracted to, and averse from. That's the real. So rag and dvesh is, we are under the control of this rag and dvesh. This is described also in the Yoga Sutras, the Patanjali. He also says this rag and dvesh, when you have certain attachments, what does he say? Sukhanushayi ragaha. That rag, that attachment, is due to the previous impressions from your past life that gave you pleasure. It gave you some pleasure. So now in this life, I like this thing. I like this kind of music. I like this kind of food. Because in the past, an impression was made and it gave you pleasure. And now you seek the same thing. And he says, Dukana shayi dveshaha. And the things you dislike, the things you're averse to, are past impressions that caused you suffering. So these are attachments and aversions. They're not choices in this life. Think about it. You like certain food. Did you choose that? Did you decide one day, I'm going to like broccoli and dislike Karela? You might love Karela. You might have a tongue that loves it. But did you decide that? Or is that something already programmed? And the same thing with the mind. Certain ideas programmed. So the living entity is very bound. I'm not making a case that we have no free will. But you can become so bound that it is very, very minimal. And actually you're being controlled by these different attachments and aversions. So this verse is pointing out one who's not bound. Therefore it says, vimuktaistu. This is the mukta. This is the liberated person. So if a person is liberated from rag and dvesh, that means everyone else is bound by rag and dvesh, right? That's the comparison here. So it says, rag dvesh vimuktaistu, one who's free from the rag and dvesh, not bound. Vishayan means the objects of the senses, and indriyas charan. So even though this person is mukta, this is what it's saying, even though they're free, they're still involved with the objects of the senses and their senses. They have their objects. They're still connected, interacting with those things. But they're completely free of attachment and aversion to them. But they may still use those things. Therefore, it says charan. Charan means, because actually Arjuna asked the question, this stitta pragya that you mentioned, Krishna, how does he walk? This is the answer to that question, how does he walk? And what Arjuna means when he says, how does he walk? It doesn't mean, does he have a limp? Does he have a walking stick? What's his rhythm of walking? It means, how are his senses engaged in this world? How's he moving? How's he acting with things? How's he interacting with things? So this verse is giving the answer that he is interacting with all the objects of the senses, but internally there's no rag and no dvesh. He has no interest. And then Prabhupada nicely explains the point of view of bhakti, the devotee. That's very important, to have no attachment or aversion, because all those things can now be used in Krishna's service. So my own attachment and aversion to those things, it's not felt by a pure devotee. It's just now, therefore, they can let something go that otherwise they may want for themselves. Or they can hold on to something that they may otherwise not want, but using it all in service. So, vimuktais tu indriyas charan. He's engaged with all these things, but free. Because he is, the next term here, atma vashyai. Because he is self-controlled. Now, lots of people are trying to be self-controlled in this world. You don't even have to be on a spiritual path. You have some addiction or something that's harming you, and you try to control it. Right? So Bhagavatam says, if you're in material consciousness, you only have two options if you're attached to something. You can either indulge in it. In which case, if you indulge in something, so again, we're mentioning that these attachments are from previous samskaras. You have an inclination, and now you take more of it. So now you're putting back another you're adding another samskar to that bundle of samskars that like this thing, and so you increase its strength. So you have an attachment. You can either indulge that attachment. And the only other option is to suppress it. You can also suppress that desire for that thing. You don't get rid of it. You can't get rid of it. It can get weakened and it can go dormant sometimes, but it actually stays in the chitta forever until it's dissolved, and nothing material can dissolve it. So you see, somebody may let's say somebody has a habit of smoking cigarettes, or I remember living in New York City at the Bhakti Center, so sometimes one of the rooms was used for Alcoholics Anonymous. And these are people who gave up for however long, different for everybody, but they gave up drinking. Now I would also notice that when they would go outside for a break, then everybody was smoking cigarettes. There's a pressure, we have an addiction and there's a pressure, and then we stop it. But now there has to be some other thing or some other outlet. You don't actually get rid of it. The tension shifts somewhere else. And now I have to do this other thing. It's also not good, but it's better than what was there previously. But someone may give that up too, and you might think, well, now it's gone. They gave up drinking, they gave up smoking, but it can't be gone. This is Narada Muni says in the fourth canto. He says, he gives the example of, you have a heavy weight on your shoulder, and so you take it off. Oh, there's some relief. But you're still holding that weight. And so now soon there'll be tension in your hands. And then that begins to bother you, become a burden. Let me put it on the other shoulder. And for a while it's not bad. When you first put something on your shoulder, you're okay. But then it starts to weigh. Now where will I put it? And these samskars, you can't just let go of them. They actually accumulate in the consciousness. This is important to know for devotees, because what this means is, we have no chance of getting rid of all these things unless something else can dissolve these attachments. You're never going to be able to do it. I'm never going to be able to do it by my will. I shift the tension. By stopping something, I shift it to somewhere else. So devotees too, when you become a devotee, it's not like you're suddenly on the pure platform. So devotees are given all these different restrictions. So are devotees also suppressing those inclinations? Yes, certainly. It's not that you become a devotee, now it's nothing as suppression. It is suppression. But something else can come through the process. That's why this verse is saying, you know, we're following so many rules as devotees, so the question to ask ourselves, is it creating more tension in me by following these rules? Or, as this verse says, prasadam adigachati, or am I actually experiencing, am I getting freed? Vimuktais, am I getting freed from these things? Do I feel a freedom? And do I feel a grace coming? Or is my all these restrictions that I'm following, are they causing me to become more and more tense, irritated, disturbed? If so, then I have to see what's missing. If I am getting disturbed more and more by all these, the sense control, the mind control, then what is lacking? What is missing? That is contained in this verse, the answer to that question. This verse is about Vashyai, Atma. Atma Vashyai, what is real self-control and how to accomplish it. Everybody's trying in different ways. But there is a great treasure here for us to take shelter of. So in the Bhagavad Gita, that means you're on the spiritual path, huh? We're all on the spiritual path. So if we indulge in the various attachments, Krishna just mentioned in the previous verses, what happens if you go in that direction? Of just indulging with no hesitation, with no regret, but you just go after whatever it is that you want. And this is the previous verses. Krishna says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment. Then from that attachment, lust. It means the attachment increases. It becomes very strong. From lust, anger. Anger. Sometimes these attachments, we can't have them. Anger will come. From anger, delusion. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. What that means, the acharyas explain, when the memory is gone, then you no longer even know or care what is right and wrong. The memory of what's right and wrong is gone. And then, buddhi nashat pranashati. Nashat pranashati means that then everything just becomes ruined. Prabhupada says one falls down. Nashta, it's destroyed, it's ruined. And then one again continues. So that is indulging. So what happens now when a devotee on the path, when they try to refrain from doing those things? Is it suppression? It has to be suppression for some time because of the material consciousness that we're coming from. It's kind of holding off something. It's not just immediately eliminated. Krishna also says that. He tells what happens for one on the path. This is text 59. This is all the same section. It's all found in the same area. He says, though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects still remains. So you may decide, I won't do this thing anymore. But internally, that taste is still there. What to do about that? There's still some desire internally, because we have external senses and we have internal senses. You know, so you can stop the activity of the external senses, but internally you still have an inclination. So in that verse, 259, the word nirahadasya, Prabhupada translates it as, in the word for word, negative restraint, negative restriction. It means you're restricting yourself, but actually it's ineffective, it's negative. There's a better way to do it. So then how? That's the question, hopefully, we're all wondering now. In material life, you can either indulge your attachments or suppress them, never getting rid of them. On the spiritual path, even there, restricting, stopping certain things, Krishna says, but the taste remains. What will you do about that? So here's another verse that gives us a little hint of what is very important in order to actually overcome these things. This is jumping to the 17th chapter, and text 28. So Krishna here says, Ashradaya hutam datam tapas taptam kritam yad chayat asat it uchate parta nachatat pretyano iha. Anything done as a sacrifice, charity, penance, whatever it is, anything you try to do that's so-called spiritual, but if it doesn't have shraddha, faith, as the foundation, real faith as the foundation in the Supreme, then the results are impermanent. So here's the first ingredient to be able to actually overcome some of those attachments that are controlling us, controlling our lives completely. Shraddha, this faith must be there. Krishna says in Bhagavatam, 11th canto, Shraddha mat sevayam tu nirguna. That faith means one who has faith that's in service to me. If we have faith that if I just serve Krishna, tu nirguna. This is above the modes, it's above the gunas, nirguna. So first thing is that faith, which, you know, what is the sign that we have real faith? Because as I was saying earlier, faith can also be within the modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. And people can become religious and join different religions, but it may just be some goodness, a material faith, a material inclination that's brought me here. That's good still, because now that you're there, you may get some transcendental experience. But it's not guaranteed that anyone who comes to any religious place is coming from real faith. What's the symptom that one has real faith? We may be wondering now, so how do I know if I actually have real faith? So this is explained by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you have real faith, then the six symptoms of Sharanagati will begin to become a part of your life. Sharanagati means surrender. And there are six symptoms of surrender. He said this Sharanagati and real faith are one and the same. So what does that mean? It means from one's personal desire, one begins to think, let me accept things that are favorable for my Krishna consciousness. And let me also reject what is unfavorable. So that's like we're talking about here. Stopping things that are unfavorable, certain attachments. Considering that Krishna is my only protector. This is like a mood, you know, a mood that has to be cultivated. If I desire to cultivate this mood, accepting Krishna as my only maintainer, that's really important. Why? Because actually it says this goptritve varanam, to consider Krishna as the only maintainer is the essence of Sharanagati, surrender to God. Because we're always worried about what's going to happen tomorrow, worried about what's going to happen in the future. What about money? What if I get sick? You know, all these fears are there and they prevent us from concentrating on Krishna. So if we can start to really depend, Krishna is maintaining me. So all these fears and anxieties and worries about the future, if we start to feel, no, I trust Krishna. I'll do my best, I'll do my duties in life, and I'll continue on this path of bhakti and completely just let go. Let's see what Krishna, he's maintaining me. He's already given so much mercy and grace. So let me completely maintain. This helps one overcome all those fears and allows one to then concentrate on Krishna, on his holy name. So, we're coming here to the end. So, first, that faith has to be there for anything to work. That's what this verse in the 17th chapter says. Unless this faith is the foundation to your charity, austerity, sense control, unless you have this faith, then all the results will be asat, temporary. But if the foundation is this faith, now we're going from suppressing to actually getting the experience and the feeling that I'm becoming freed. That's why Prabhupada says the regulative principles of freedom. They're restrictions, but they're freeing you. So, just to end here, Krishna, if we take the second half of that verse I mentioned, 259, about if you, though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But then what's the solution? But ceasing such engagements by experiencing that higher taste, then he becomes fixed in consciousness. So, the higher taste, the only way to give up the lower taste is the higher taste. And Krishna says in two verses later what that higher taste is. What is it? Param Dristva means the higher taste, but what is it? So it's revealed in text 61. Who would think here in the second chapter there is bhakti, there are the jewels of bhakti, but they're just very slight and the acharyas have illuminated them. But it's right there, two verses later, mat padaha. Krishna is the higher taste. So besides just controlling the senses, which we have to try to do, even if it's suppressing them, but the mind has to become focused on Krishna, Krishna's name, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's beauty. Prabhupada says in that purport, unless one develops a taste for Krishna's beauty, then one cannot overcome the senses. So transcendental faith, sense control, but primarily focusing the mind on Krishna, hearing his pastimes, Krishna's beautiful pastimes. He is attractive by nature. So if we spend time there, we might think, I wonder this sometimes, how did I get attracted to this? You know, I like to think about philosophical things, and I was reading some things, and then there's Krishna, a little boy, playing a flute, the simplicity of Sri Vrindavan Dham. How does someone reasonable and logical, I think I'm reasonable and logical, definitely not, probably, but still, I would try to look at concepts and see what should be my path and what should I do, and then I'm hearing about this, I thought, what is this? God is like a little baby? You know, I was reading recently how Krishna's lying there as a little baby, and he's the supreme controller. He has unlimited power. And then one time, Krishna was lying there in his bed, and one of the maidservants came in to check on him and saw that he had turned over. And this lady, Yashoda, Yashoda, come, come. She was scared. She was worried. What happened? What happened? Krishna turned over on his own. Let's have a celebration. He did it on his own. He turned over. So God, they're shocked that God could turn over. They don't know that he's God. But this was amazing to them that he turned over. But meanwhile, he is the source of everything, the creator of everything. He has all powers. But the residents of Vrindavan are amazed that he turned over. Anyone can just turn over, huh? Babies just do that at some point. So how are we getting attracted? Is this the conclusion? It doesn't make sense. But Krishna by nature is attractive. So as we get purified, more and more this will charm our hearts. We'll see the beauty of it. The residents of Vrindavan, they're kind of love. And if anyone in this room has anything that's drawing them towards this, well, I don't quite understand it, but it's beautiful. I want to hear more. That's an indication that you have transcendental faith and that you've already received mercy. You're being pulled. Krishna, that's what he does. He draws you. That's what Krishna means, the word. And we're feeling ourselves being pulled, even though it's just so much beyond our reasoning and intelligence. But we follow that to the end. If you follow that to the end and stay and keep associating with advanced devotees, hearing and chanting, and even giving up things, even though it's a struggle, but you develop this taste of the beauty of Krishna, then eventually, as this verse says, also prasadam adigachati, then more and more mercy you will attain. So this is the power of the Bhagavad Gita. Just a few words that were in this verse, but the acharyas have illuminated. So much is there. So many jewels of the glories of bhakti are in this verse. So we'll stop here. A little bit over, but if anyone has some reflection or comment or question. Yes, Prabhu. Microphone? I think somebody was before you, Prabhu.
Kangan Ryan, can I go first?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Yeah.
Protection and maintenance. How do you distinguish between the two?
Protection and maintenance.
Because the six symptoms of surrender, one is protection, and one could say, well, Krishna protects me, he maintains me. Hmm. Or if Krishna's maintaining me, it's a kind of protection. So,
yes.
How do we distinguish? Because there's a difference, obviously, otherwise it wouldn't be distinguished.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. And one thing we can do as a source that I can give for the answer is because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote songs about each of these items, the six symptoms of surrender. So, you know, one of them is danya, humility. So he wrote several songs about what is humility. He wrote several songs about what is protection, and songs also about maintenance. So, you know, sometimes the way I've understood it also, that in times of need, if one calls out, Krishna, please protect me, that also should be there. Krishna, save me, protect me. In times of need, in times of great difficulty, that may be something that we turn to and express. And maintenance is a very deep thing. It's an overall thing of just, you are my ultimate shelter. As an overall mood, goptritve varanam, that this one godbrother of Prabhupada would say also like this, this is, you have to select your guardian in life. Who is your ultimate guardian? This is how he described goptritve varanam, that this, I choose Krishna for everything. He's maintaining me day by day. It's this deep mood in the heart. Whereas protection, and if you look at those verses by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they seem to have that spirit also of protection. In the moment, in need, who do I go to for shelter? When something comes up, this is my understanding of it. But Prabhu, if you have anything also to share on that, I'd love to hear.
I agree.
Jai.
Rakshamam Pahimam. Protect my bhakti. Protect my mind, my senses, everything. Jai.
Hare Krishna.
I think Krishna maintains, but Krishna doesn't fulfill your wants, desire. That's different.
Hmm.
Prabhu, thank you for your class. I'm quite impressed by it. But I have one thing to add, one small thing.
Thank you.
It's the word dovetail. Hmm. Prabhupada used a lot.
Hmm.
And dovetail is like, they used to build houses or log cabins or whatever. There was a joint that would come together.
Mm-hmm.
They had pegs at that point. So after they got the thing together, they could put a peg in. But dovetail means that you have a desire or an attraction for something, and you try to utilize it in Krishna's service as much as possible.
Mm.
Prime example is prasadam.
Yes.
How many of us came because we were attracted to prasadam?
Mm.
Or beauty, the beauty of the deities, how the deities are so beautifully dressed. Mm. You want to look at something beautiful.
Mm.
So here it is. We're so fortunate to have such a great pujari department here.
Yeah.
And also the deities just happen to be some of the most beautiful deities like that. So dovetailing, you don't have to totally restrict yourself from that, but you can try to engage as much as possible. For example, I like to play harmonium or keyboard instruments. Mm. If I get an opportunity to do that in the kirtan and accompany the devotees, it makes me feel so good that I actually did something that's of some use in Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Beautiful. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu. Jai. I don't want to hold anybody here, so please, whoever needs to. This verse, after all, says prasadam adigachati, that you will attain prasadam. So prasadam is also to be attained, so please go if you need to, but I'm also happy to stay for any comments or questions.
I was also thinking that Krishna consciousness, that higher taste, is service. Mm. When we do service, then there's a taste, whether it's washing pots or cooking or cleaning or whatever it is, and you're doing it for someone, for the Supreme Person. So then you get a taste, and that taste just gets bigger the more you do, and you can't give it up because it just tastes so good.
Yeah.
And that kind of finishes off any lower taste that you're looking at.
That's how it works. Thank you, Mataji. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai. Okay.
Thank you. I was thinking that following the rules, regulation, yes, if I don't have intelligence, I'll feel it's like restricted, suffocated. But when I have intelligence, then I'll see actually it is causing freedom. It's giving me that freedom. Mm. But that intelligence has to be there.
Yeah.
And the association of the sadhu, in the beginning you said that dharmasya tatta nihita guhayam, you explained that. And that's very nice. I appreciate that. Mm. That is the mantra alive or dead? That question should be asked. Mm. Well, if you got from live person who is actually activated and he's giving, then it is alive. Mm. Otherwise, mantra can be found in any book, not necessarily is alive. Mm. The mantra becomes alive because of the live person who is giving. So that's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. How do you do?